Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Greg McVicar, creator of Undercurrents, and this is KBOO 90.7 Portland.
KBOO's fall membership drive is just around the corner. Help us kick off our KBOO Out Loud Drive on August 20th for National Radio Day, where we'll bring you more of our independently made content, KBOO stories, and KBOO testimonials all day long.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Good evening, you're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Alexis Hillman and Alicia Jane Ryder. Welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, Alexis, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then Alicia, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll kind of talk about your project.
Sure. So, I'm a family doctor. But I'm originally from Philadelphia. I'm an Army veteran currently living in Minnesota, northern Minnesota. I practice at a small federally qualified healthcare center. And one of my side projects is doing a docuseries. The original title was How to Dream. There may be a different title this time around, but my series looks at the process that trans people go through and the things that they have to do in order to be able to begin or complete their transition.
Great. Thanks. And Alicia, can you tell us about yourself?
I'm Alicia Jane Ryder. I'm 72 years old. I am fully transitioned transgender woman. I am retired after 51 years of working in government service. And I work on several projects. Right now I'm working with Dr. Hillman and also with Dr. Alexis Unger on her website, which is coming online hopefully in the next couple of days or possibly weeks at the most. I love working with the transgender community. I also created and administer the Portland, Oregon Transgender Service Provider Index. I could have made the name longer, I suppose. But we've got over 11,000 members on Facebook, and also have the Transgender Ham Radio Project, or TARO. The links to that are also on the index. We also have another site for the parents of transgender kids who feel they have to flee red states for sanctuary states, and we try to find them housing and jobs, and try to get the kids placed in schools, etc. We have experts in all these. The index is also for anyone fleeing red states for blue states. And again, we help people find jobs and housing, and service providers, all kinds of things, from electrolysis to surgeons. And these are all listed on the index. We take in new members all the time, and we're still growing like crazy. right now, I think we have one of the largest transgender communities in the greater Portland, basically Washington and Oregon area. We are a large community, to say the very least. I think we have become, to the transgender community, what San Francisco was to gay people in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. I think we have grown to that point, because at this point, I run into transgender people almost everywhere I go, which is really refreshing. So,
thanks. I'm Alexis. Do you want to be called Alexis or Dr. Hillman?
Either way.
Okay.
I've been called worse.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll just call you Alexis, since that's how I first got to know you.
Sure.
So, Alexis, what inspired you to work with transgender people on this project?
So it started when I was living and practicing in Pensacola, Florida. I was the only osteopathic physician, operating as an osteopathic physician, you know, specializing in OMT. And I was approached by a member of the trans community saying, hey, would you be willing to prescribe HRT? And I was like, well, you know, I had never done it before, but I'm willing to learn about it, and, you know, I'm willing to provide this service. And I started getting a lot of word of mouth referrals, and other physicians who weren't comfortable doing it would refer to me. And I got a really good size practice. And as I was going through, I was hearing a lot of recurring themes about what people were having to do in order to start their transition, to be able to afford their transition, hiccups they were having in terms of, like, families throwing them out or being harassed at work, or, you know, a lot of things that trans people have, you know, had to deal with and continue to deal with. And it just struck me, like, I wish people could hear what I'm being told in the exam room. Obviously, what trans people or any patients tell me in the exam room is, you know, confidential. I'm not going around blabbing and saying, you know, so-and-so told me blah, blah, blah. But I really wish this could be conveyed to the general public so people could understand what trans people are going through just to access care, and how to live a life that aligns with their hopes, dreams, expectations, what they feel, you know, how they are inside. So I had a patient who was amenable to being interviewed, and that's kind of where it started. I was on a gender-affirming healthcare provider's email list, and I sent the request out to them that, hey, I'm looking to do this. If you, as a physician, a surgeon, a provider, are willing to interview with me, or if you know any patients who are willing to talk to me. And that's how I was introduced to Alicia. And since then, she knows everybody. You know, she's introduced me to a lot of people. She's helped me set up a lot of connections and a lot of interviews. And it's really just grown from there. I released a couple of episodes back in 2021, I want to say, 21, 22. And then I put the camera down for a little bit, you know, life kind of, you know, intervened, and I ended up having to leave Florida for my own safety and my family's safety. But when Trump came back into office, I sent a text to Alicia and to Dr. Alexis Unger. I'm like, hey, how do you feel about doing a part two to this episode? And both of them were game. So we're, you know, we're getting the gang back together and we're talking about all the things. So we'll have more episodes coming out soon.
Oh, great. Alicia, what motivates you to continue to do this advocacy? Why is this important?
We're a family. Just plain and simple. We are a family. The people that I work with, some people are desperate. Other people, they want to be themselves. They don't want someone telling them, "Oh, you can't be yourself. You have to go by some specific model that doesn't fit really anyone." I mean, no one is a carbon copy of someone else, and we're all just trying to, you know, just express ourselves the way we are. What really is sad to me is how many of the cisgender community think that everything we are is only about sex. And, you know, they see everything through their sexual lens, and they think that everyone who is transgender is only doing it to be some kind of a prostitute or something. And it's that couldn't be further from the truth. The truth is, I also think we're more moral than a lot of the cisgender people are. I really feel that a lot of transgender people, when you think about it, when you give a male testosterone, it might increase their wanting to do things. But when you give a male estrogen, things kind of stop working like that. And there's more, it's more cerebral. And so you have basically, as far as I've found, far less sexual drive, etc. And it becomes more thought conscious, this type of thing. And so when you see the outside people of our community coming down on us so hard, and I know these people, that my community, have become so cerebral and so, you know, so normal, to see us put down so much by people who are making the wrong assumption about us. This is what worries me the most, is I see people like the Trump administration making all these things like he wants to make us go away, like they were some horrible people, and they couldn't be further from the truth. We're not. You know, he's a sexual predator, so he sees everything through the lens of a sexual predator. And so I think what would happen here, I think the reason Donald Trump wants us to go away is, I think he was turned on by a transgender person, found out they were transgender, and doesn't want anyone else to find out that he liked transgender people. It's something like what happens with some gay people who didn't want to find anyone to find out that they were gay.
Oh yeah, like Herbert Hoover, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where we are with Donald Trump right now. I think he desires, consciously or subconsciously, he desires transgender people because he thinks a lot of us are beautiful. And at the same time...
Well, you're quite beautiful, Alicia.
Well thank you. I have a face for radio. but it's like, you know, it really feels like he is trying to distance himself as much as possible. And it's like every time somebody brings up something about him and any transgender person, you know, he tries to make fun of it, like he did with the former mayor of New York, who he was, you know, seen in a scene with when what was his name?
Cuomo?
Not Cuomo, the previous one, 9/11.
Giuliani.
Giuliani. When Giuliani was in drag, and he was doing all that stuff with Giuliani. And then people were saying, oh, he likes transgender people. That's when the attacks on us really seem to start. Because he really is afraid to be seen as someone who might be pro-trans. So he went out of his way to try to show the other way. And if he hears this, he'll probably become even more difficult for us. Because this is the kind of thing that we are fighting, just like gay people were in the 80s and 90s, about, you know, some of the prominent anti-trans or anti-gay people were then. We're probably in the same boat. So, you know, we're dealing with somebody who is transphobic probably because he likes us and doesn't want to admit it, because he will lose his evangelistic following. So Donald, if you're listening, just lighten up, for God's sake. I really think that he is pathological about this. Let's get Mary Trump to do an analysis on this. Mary, if you're listening, analyze your uncle about whether he really hates transgender people or just is so afraid that someone is going to find out that he likes us that he's going out of his way. It's possible it's subconscious, whatever, but he is unusually against us. And it's not like he sees us as something awful, even. This is like he's really afraid that people are going to find out that he actually likes transgender people. That's what I see. And I think ultimately everyone else will eventually see that as well.
You provide services, including to people who may identify as transgender. The Trump administration, I have, as long as we're talking about them, has begun the process of targeting physicians who provide gender-affirming care to children. They may also eventually try to do something similar to any physician who provides any kind of gender-affirming care, including to adults. I mean, they've already made it clear that they intend to target that through Medicaid and Medicare. And 23 states have written laws to deny gender-affirming care. A lot of those laws specifically target physicians. I mean, the mechanism by which they do it is to impose, you know, similar to abortion, where they target the providers and with criminal fines, with criminal charges and with fines if they provide affirming services. How will you deal with that if something like that comes your way? I mean, how would you deal with that?
Sure. So let me just start by saying, like, I'm not speaking as a representative of the clinic that I work at. So, you know, I'm not making an official statement on behalf of them. You know, what I will say is it's been hard to plan for because we didn't know from what angle they were going to attack gender-affirming care. You know, testosterone itself is considered a controlled substance, or are they going to try to do it that way? You know, is there some other thing that they're going to try to do? You know, I was in Florida when they really ramped up the anti-trans legislation, and we had to really pivot from talking about, in the case of kids, you know, talking about puberty blockers and everything and focusing more on social transition. And, okay, well, are there any nearby states that maybe you can travel to where you can get it? Well, Florida is bordered by, you know, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, not in that order, Texas. I'm sure there's another state in there somewhere that I'm missing. None of them are allowing it. So, you know, we, down there, we just had to kind of do the best that we could do. Okay, focus on social transitioning. You know, and then you get kind of creative with the coding. The advantage that I had was I wasn't billing insurance. I was a cash-only practice. So my notes were not getting sent to any insurance company unless they were specifically pursuing surgery and we had to do a prior auth for something. How we're going to do it in Minnesota, it remains to be seen. You know, the strength of the clinic where I work is that we try to affirm the health and dignity of each individual person. And if you could talk to some of our care coordinators and some of our nurses, we bend over backwards trying to get people where they need to be and to get them the services that they need. So whatever comes down, we are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that people are getting taken care of. But we're also not putting the clinic at undue risk because, you know, we still serve the entire population of Cook County. We have people who come down from the next county over or two counties down who rely on us for health care. Like, we can't, and this is, I hate to say this is the brilliance of going after physicians, because they put the physicians in a difficult position where they have to choose between patients. And that's what they were counting on in Florida, that, well, do you want to put your practice in jeopardy? Do you want to put your family in jeopardy and your career? And do you want to go to jail? Oh, well, maybe you ought to stop doing this. That's the maniacal and diabolical brilliance of going after physicians. I know it sounds like I'm giving a non-answer, but we just have to get creative on our side. Like, one of the things that I would do in Florida, especially if I were trying to get, like, labs covered under insurance, I would code it as endocrine disorder not otherwise specified, or long-term drug therapy, which neither is technically untrue. But if you wanted me to be more specific, okay, yeah, it's trans care. So that's a long way of saying I don't know. mm-hmm. but we're going to do our best. Mm-hmm. You know, the like I said, I work for a wonderful organization that really puts the patients first and their families first. And like I said, if you could see what our care coordinators and what our nurses go through to get people where they need to be, it's I could not do their job. I know that. Mm-hmm. It's just we're just going to do our best because trans people are our patients too, and mm-hmm. they're no less patients than any other patient coming in for diabetes or frailty or anything else.
Yeah. Alicia, you and Alexis, you're both veterans. Mm-hmm. We recently had on Bree Fram, mm-hmm. and we had three other active duty, mm-hmm. At the time, transgender service members. In the 3 months since we did that show, I think about 2,000 transgender service members have already mm-hmm. been forced out of the military, including Bree, who wrote two books about the honorable service that transgender military service mm-hmm. members have provided. Would either of you care to make any statements or talk about your own feelings about this? I mean, the role that transgender people play in the U.S. military and how you feel about the current moves by the Trump administration against trans service members.
I do know the last time that Trump threw the military members out, it left the military short, and that made the United States more vulnerable because these were career people that were specialists, that some of them were very rare specialists. They worked in the Pentagon. They worked in places that you probably wouldn't even know the name of, but their specialties were very rare. And to retrain new people to do their jobs is very expensive. They probably had at least half their career to go as far as their ages went. And the being transgender did not interfere with their jobs in one bit. The military is not just about, you know, grunts and people who are willing to go into a foxhole and shoot each other. The military now is extremely technical, and it's intelligence. It runs with satellites, and it runs with computers, and it runs more than 50% now with the highly sophisticated technology. And when you dump people out who are critically needed in the military just because of their gender or their gender preference, and you don't care about whether they get the positions are covered or not, and you have to wait for the new training, and in some cases they would have been the people who trained the new people, but no, you just dump them out. That is completely illogical and completely stupid as far as having preparedness for the military. When you lose specialists, especially in Intel, especially in CNC, Command and Control Pentagon, you lose more than just their skill. You lose their experience. You lose everything that they bring to the table, all their interfacing, all their connections. In some cases, these are specialist programmers who, without them, systems shut down. These are like critical pieces to a very large military machine. And to be that stupid makes me think that he was becoming anti-American, getting rid of the people that we needed the most. And I honestly think that since he's done this a second time, for one thing, it's going to be a lot more difficult to recruit people to some of these positions, especially if the only oddity about them is their gender. And who really cares? If you're in a plane crash and the specialist who's going to come to save your life is transgender, why would you care if they're going to save your life, or if they're not available, you die? So, you know, what kind of an idiot would just automatically take these people out for this reason? They're not traitors, and yet he discharged them as if they were traitors. They had dishonorable discharges that stayed on their lifetime employment record. They lost so much in all this just to make one man happy, because one man has a mental problem about a phobia about us. Mm-hmm. So why do we respect this one man? Mm-hmm. Why? When he is phobic and causing America to degrade in readiness.
What I'll say is, you know, I joined the military after 9/11, and there is no one I know who joined the service who didn't have a great love of country, a love of community, an appreciation for the freedoms that we have here compared to a lot of places in the world, who didn't join for good, honorable reasons. And that's whether male, female, trans, doesn't matter. Gay, straight, doesn't matter. You know, we were there to execute a certain mission. You know, in the medical department, we were helping not only service members, you know, dependents, we were helping locals. You know, when I did my ER rotation in Texas, you know, it was a trauma center. We were treating the community, you know, so there is not a person I came across in my service that I was not proud to serve with. And it breaks my heart that trans service members are being targeted this way specifically. You know, when I first, I went through ROTC, I got my commission after college. I was applying for a scholarship, and at that time, you know, I hadn't come out as bisexual. Like, I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't sure. I didn't know. I'd never had a boyfriend. I didn't know what the hell I was. But one of my friends had talked me into joining the Gay Straight Alliance. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, that's fine. But because I put it down on my CV for my scholarship application, at that time, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still in effect. One of the officers in the ROTC program took me aside and he's like, how much do you want the scholarship? And he's like, I would love to have the scholarship. And he said, then you need to take the Gay Straight Alliance off your CV because we don't know which side you're on. You know, so it's like, you know, we're supposed to be past that. We're supposed to be in an era where it doesn't matter. These are all people who had to achieve a certain amount in order to be accepted. They had to achieve a certain amount to get through basic, to get through advanced. If they were officers, they had to achieve a certain amount in order to become officers, you know, to get their promotions, to get their training, all the special schools. That's not given to anybody. You have to prove that you deserve it. And them just taking these trans people out, it's disgusting. And it's not who we are or who we should be. But it's the same organization that won't do anything about sexual assault and will protect pedophiles and rapists and will punish victims with charges of adultery when they were raped. So it's like, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I still have hope that we are a better organization, we are a more professional organization, and that we're constantly getting better. So it just, I guess it just strikes me, again, I give really long-winded answers, but I guess it just really strikes me as incredibly disgusting and unfair. Because I haven't known a single trans person who was a rapist or a pedophile or who was protected from consequences of their actions like certain cis men have.
Mm-hmm. So we've got time for just a couple more questions. I wanted to get back to your mutual project that you're working on. Can you tell me a little bit about this this project that you're working on together?
Well, I find people for her to interview, and she interviews them, like I found you and set this up. We work with doctors and professionals, and also with the patients and clients. And Dr. Hillman works with the clients. Dr. Unger works with the doctors, and so between them, it's a perfect setup. So Dr. Unger is working on the website part of this. Dr. Hillman is working on the interviews and the video, the documentary stuff. And so together, this meshes together to make one incredible project. Once this whole thing comes online, it's going to help the community in many, many ways. It's like a Walmart. In some ways, I hate to use the term, but it'll be informative and also useful in that it'll be connecting providers with transgender people in the community for virtually everything they need. And so it's kind of trying to get all the kinks out of the process from point A to point Z. When I went through the process, I had to do all the logistics myself, and I was extremely lucky in that the fact that I had both of them helping me, because every time I went to Scottsdale, Arizona, they lived with me whenever I had a surgery, which is amazing to have a medical doctor and a psychologist living with you when you go for a surgery. So I was covered in more ways than I think anybody
else. I was just surrounded by cats.
Well, you know, they're doctors. Okay, fine. But I was
cats.
Yes. But I was extremely lucky. I mean, literally every time I went down there, they were there. They came with me. We all got together. And we made good use of the time, you know, interviewing some of Dr. Meltzer's staff and other doctors, et cetera.
And Dr. Toby Meltzer?
Yes, Dr. Toby Meltzer. Oh, yeah. He's a genius and an artist. And Dr. Meltzer, thank
he's
you.
So nice.
You.
He's just so dang nice for a surgeon.
Amazing, yes.
Yeah.
But because, you know, we were all together down there, on my last surgery afterwards, we all met at the condo that I had rented. And I got to be like a fly on the wall or something like that when Dr. Hillman and Dr. Unger got to sit and ask him questions about what he thought. And so I had an incredible experience getting to just watch and listen to this, because this was like this unfortunately wasn't recorded. We should have recorded this, because the questions and answers were remarkable. And for me, being a transgender woman who had gone through all these surgeries, to see three of my favorite people on the planet all communicating like this was a remarkable experience. It really was.
Sounds great.
Yeah,
it was.
I appreciate the information that we're bringing about the medical side, the psychological side, and the kind of just general information, general interest. Because my target audience was especially the uninformed. My inclination is to call them civilians, but they're not civilian. Well, some of them are. But the uninformed non-queer or non-trans cisgender person who maybe had questions about trans people and what it actually entailed. But as a secondary, I have found that trans people have appreciated hearing stories about them, by them. You know, I especially in the first round of episodes, I tried to keep my voice out of it. And someone suggested, oh, you know, this would be really better if you had narration for it. You know, I could hire a narrator for you. He's like, no. I want these stories to be told strictly by the person. Like, I want to keep myself out of it as much as possible. Since that time, you know, I've come out as non-binary. And, you know, got my driver's license updated to an X marker. So now it's, you know, Dr. Unger once told me, you know, research is me search. And that's when she was like trying to put me like, you sure you're not trans? Because you kind of give off those vibes. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
I remember that conversation.
Oh, trust me, I couldn't even have it verbally. We were passing notes to each other to have a conversation.
But we were walking that time, and yeah. You guys were, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I was uncomfortable.
I know.
But, you know, it has been, as I feel, as meaningful for me as it has been to present these stories. and to have people learn from them. And, like, you know, in Alicia's case, you know, it gives people hope that, you know, no offense, I'm going to bring your age up, but, you know, it's like, it's never too late. You know, I see young people who are especially like, well, if I don't do this by this certain age, like, I'm never going to da-da-da, and, you know, I'm never going to get here, and I'm never going to look good, and I'm never going to, like, well, let me show you a picture. It's like, let me send you a link to this episode. Like, she tried 3 separate times to get going on this, and finally, after 65, she got it done, she got it taken care of, and she's rocking and rolling. Like, it's never too late. So,
I'm inspirational.
Thank you.
You are. Well, you know, talk about you all the time.
I feel like I won the lottery. I really do. I feel like I won the lottery. I guess for the amount of money the insurance company paid, I guess it is. But it really feels like it. I mean, how many people get to do what I've done?
Yeah.
Really, when you think about it, how many people get to experience this? Mm. How many people go for 65 years of their life and then get to live completely the other side? Mm. I mean, basically, we have two kinds of life that we could possibly have, and it's chosen for us without giving us any option whatsoever. And yet, some of us are able to do this and experience life from a whole different point of view, completely different experience. And, you know, this is a remarkable experience to be able to do this. Because normally, you know, you get caught up in the thing, especially when you retire. You know, you're born, you grow up, you're educated, you get married, you have children, you work all your lives, you get to the point where you retire, and then you die. And you're in this one track, and you can't get off the track. You have to stay on this one track. And to be able to pick yourself up off this track and go onto another track and go happily along, that's a gift. That's why I feel like it's like winning the lottery.
Well, see, and you take a very positive spin on it, because I know a lot of people who would feel or have felt that, you know, well, all this time spent, you know, in this wrong sex, you know, I'm not a man, I'm a woman, or I'm not a woman, I'm a man, or, you know, any variation thereof, and they feel like it's time wasted, and you take the lesson and you're like, okay, that's a win, let's, you know, next thing.
Yeah. Well, really, in order to be healthy mentally, rather than saying, well, I wasted all that time, you know, it's like, yeah, it was getting here. It's like, my old self, I thank him for finally getting here, for finally doing the steps to do this right. And, you know, I don't throw that away, although I do have PTSD from some of that, and I wish I could get rid of some of those memories, but now my life is different, my whole body is different, everything about me feels different, and I can actually put those away and not have to dwell on them as my experience or my personage. You know, I have a different personage, I'm a different person in a lot of ways, and it makes life feel different. Also, even though I'm 72, I feel 32. For one thing,
well, you look 32.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you, Dr. Meltzer. But HRT is
I gotta talk to him myself.
Yeah, well, HRT is like the fountain of youth. And I have been feeling, each year I feel like I'm going backwards a couple of years. And it's absolutely amazing because, you know, you think about what Dr. Meltzer once told me, and this makes a lot of sense. Aging is masculinizing. And so if you reverse masculinity, you reverse aging. So that in itself, done through surgery and HRT, is like the fountain of youth. And if you see yourself in the mirror as younger, you automatically start to feel younger. And you do things like a younger person. You start to do more exercise, more walking. You know, you get to meet more people. So many older people don't have any friends. Because they figure, well, I have to make friends with somebody else who's older, and they're all stick in the mud. And that's an old term, but it's what it feels like. And it's, you know, that in itself, I no longer feel like I have to associate only with 72-year-old people.
Your website, if people would like to find out more about your website, okay, and the work that you're doing, how can they find out about that?
Okay, the new website that Alex is bringing online is gendertherapy.com. And that's not online yet. If you go there now, there's nothing there. So you come back, there's nothing. The links for that the links for all the new stuff will be posted everywhere all over the internet. We have this massive campaign we're doing. It'll probably also be in under this video that you're making as well. Mm-hmm. And I'll be giving it to you as well. And also, Dr. Unger will probably be coming on your show and premiering the whole thing too. It'll also be on the Portland Transgender Service Provider Index as well as a big banner at the top. So we're going to have a lot of direction to that new website. So that is going to be quite a remarkable thing because it's cutting edge. I can't give away too much of it because it is very cutting edge. It's been 4 years in the making, and this will give quite a boost to anyone transitioning. This is going to be really different, a different cutting edge kind of technology. So this may end up changing a lot of things in the psychology area in general.
Great.
Because of the way it's going together.
Great. And if people want to, is there a way for people to find some of the videos that you've produced?
Sure. So if you search, it's called 61 Hotel Productions. That's the name of the channel. And then there are two episodes there right now. There's an episode with Alicia, and then there is an episode with Maya and Darla. Unfortunately, I did have to take one episode down because the person was not safe. And they felt like that information being out there was a threat to their safety, so I did take that down. But there are two episodes currently available.
Great.
Say what the names are.
Wonderful.
Hmm? Say what the names so they can find them in the...
It's called Episode 1, How to Dream Alicia. And then I think Maya and Darla were Episode 2 or 3. I forget.
Three.
Yeah. Maya and Darla.
No, I think there were two.
Oh, great.
I think there were two.
Either way. Yeah.
Well, it's really been a pleasure having both of you on Transpositive, and best of luck with these projects. They sound very exciting.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Now we're going to talk some more about what's going on right now here in this country with people disappearing. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about how that's affecting us personally. So joining me for this last part of the show is Sheila. Sheila, welcome back to Transpositive. How are you doing?
This has been a very difficult week for me, and I'll come to that as we talk about our topic tonight.
Yeah, it's been a weird time right now. I mean, people are literally disappearing off the streets. I mean, we have masked thugs who are wearing, things completely covering their faces, who don't have any warrants, driving around in unmarked vehicles, kidnapping people off the streets and putting them in, detention centers. We had that happen here in Oregon recently. A transgender woman who was raped in Mexico and fled to the United States to flee from persecution and from sexual assault, settled in Portland, Oregon, because she knew that Portland was a safe place for transgender people, was recently abducted by ICE. When she showed up at the immigration center to do her regular check-in that she had been doing for months, so she was following the law, doing what she was supposed to do, and while she was at the immigration center on McAdam Avenue, she was arrested and detained by ICE and put into custody in Spokane and threatened with deportation back to Mexico, where she had been originally raped and assaulted for being transgender. And she was only released after 2 months because of a federal judge's order. So she was very lucky. There's been lots of transgender people who are undocumented, who have disappeared off the streets of the United States, and we don't know where they are.
to Christina.
So what do you think about that, Sheila?
Well, we have to be so careful of getting each other frightened and depressed to a degree, and I'll cover that near the end. The significant thing right here is to understand that the purpose of this is political. This is political terrorism. This is a way of getting people frightened for their survival. This is a way of gaining political points by marshaling hatred towards targeted groups. So there's no doubt about it that this is an effective rhetorical device adopted by politicians to make our lives miserable. And the idea that it is based on anything else is shown by the duplicity that they use. For instance, one of the things they say is, we're not against transgender people, we're just against gender dysphoria. That's like saying we're not against diabetics, we're just against people with high blood sugar. It's just absurd, and on its face it's absurd. And then when you try to contract it, they say such things as, well, then you must be a victim of Trump derangement syndrome, as though that is an isolated and actual diagnosis, that there are actually people mentioned in the diagnostic and statistical manual that are suffering from this delusional belief. But it meant to silence all debate by simply characterizing it. In other words, it's an ad hominem attack upon the arguer rather than attacking his position. So everything that they do is designed to create quandaries, whether it's professional quandaries by saying the only way that you can continue to practice is we're going to raise the bar to such a degree that if you take on a transgender patient and aid them in some way, that what you're doing is you're violating the law. So the only way to avoid the law and still meet your standard of care as a physician is to simply not take on these people. So once again, it's a device to make people invisible, to take away their voices, and to refuse to engage in dialogue. This is why they attack universities. This is why they attack professional associations. This is why they're trying to tear the educational department down. All of these things are united as one long and comprehensive effort to change America and turn us into a fascist state. Now, this makes me very angry, and there's two things that run through our community, our anger and fear, and both of them are based upon feeling threatened. Now, I had a friend this week who is not transgender and who committed suicide because of other issues in her life that I love very, very deeply and have loved her for a long, long period of time. But it snuck up on her, and all of a sudden we were having lovely days, and the night before everything was fine, and it alerted me to certain things that I want our community to be aware of. One of them is that suicide is like a disease. It's like a traffic wreck. If you wanted to avoid traffic wrecks, you have to be extremely careful that you drive carefully. Well, when we're dealing with massive tension and prejudice directed at our community, it's essential that we practice mental hygiene, and that means watch out for depression, watch out for sudden impulsive self-destructive things, watch out for having your whole life flash before you as, because you have one problem right now, it's going to last forever and there'll never be a solution to it. My friend was only 40 years old. So she had technically maybe 30 to 40 years ahead of her. None of those options, all the things you can do in 40 years, appeared to her on the night that she destroyed her life, her beautiful, beautiful life, because she was so caught up in the moment, so caught up in the immediate feeling that she was having, that she could not stop. And so this is why I caution all of our community to be so, so careful of each other. Be careful, above all, save yourself. Don't ever do this because it hurts so many people so deeply that they'll never be quite the same again. And no matter how lonely or you feel, or how much you might feel that your life might be worthless, believe me, there are people who love you. Believe me, each of us has little tendrils that reach into other people's lives. And when those things are pulled out, it's like pulling a plant out of the soil. All of a sudden, everybody else is just gasping for breath. So please be careful of other people, even if you can't be careful for yourself at that moment. So that's one caution I wanted to do. The other thing is cautiousness towards other people. Be careful what you say to people. Be very, very careful, because you don't know what you're likely to trigger in somebody. We don't know at various moments of the day just what the state of mind of other people are. And we can't always be at a meeting where we say, you know, do the roundabout and say, how is everyone feeling tonight? Life doesn't work like that. Sometimes everything just piles up on us all at once, and other people aren't aware of what's going on, or the internal weather of our being, and that something that might not have harmed us or hurt our feelings under one set of circumstances is massively harmful at another. And the last thing I wanted to say is, be grateful for each other. We are all gifts to each other. If we don't have love, we don't survive. And the love you give may just save somebody's life. So every time that you say goodbye to a friend, don't be in a hurry. Don't get so you treat each other carelessly or as though they were a resource that would always be there, because you do not know that they will always be there. I had no idea this was going to happen to my friend. Absolutely none. So it caught me completely unawares and absolutely wiped me out, and it still does. This is one of the first days I haven't been crying all day. So I think it's so important for all of us to be so self-careful, careful of ourselves, careful of others, careful of our community, and keep our guard up, because these types of things can sneak up on you in an impulsive moment to do something in a short term that has lasting and indeed lifelong, because you've terminated your life effects. And even if you're feeling disgusted with yourself, or you're angry, or you say, I've been a failure, anything that triggers you, you have to put that on the back burner and say, I'll talk about that tomorrow. Tonight, I'm going to connect with my friends. And if you can't find your friends, you wait another day till you do connect with your friends. And you talk it out, you don't act it out. So please do that for my sake and for the sake of my dear one who isn't here.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Sheila. I'm so sorry for you, and I'm sorry for your friend. I mean, I just think about she all of the years she had ahead of her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think about all of the beautiful transgender people I've known about over the years who have done the same thing. You know, people who had really, like, they had so much potential and so much to give mm-hmm. to the world. And because they got caught up in a moment of grief, a moment of uncertainty, a moment of anxiety, they ended it, and it had such a devastating impact on everyone around them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to be so careful of anger also. Anger can be our friend when we fight back against oppression. Anger, when it's turned in on ourselves, can be very deadly. So we have to be so cautious of whether they're depression, and in the AA programs, they'll say, don't be too tired, don't be too hungry, don't be too anything. When you find yourself being extreme, you seek help. And if you are in any way inclined to be depressed or to have emotional swings, even if you have to write it on a slip of paper that you wear on a wristband around your wrist with the suicide, not just one, but several suicide prevention lines, keep that on you at all times, the same way you'd keep pepper spray if you were going into a tough neighborhood. Our biggest enemies could be ourselves, and we have to be on guard against ourselves if we want to survive in this world.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of resources that you can always go to right away, no matter what's going on. You can always call 988 if you're feeling suicidal or in crisis. Almost anywhere, you can call 988, and that'll be available for you right away. You can talk to somebody. You can also make a call. You can make a call, and if you want to, you can call the Trans Lifeline. The number of the Trans Lifeline, if you're transgender and if you're feeling suicidal, is 1-866-488-7386. So again, there's two options there. One, if you're ever feeling suicidal or in crisis, you can call 988. almost anywhere in America where you live, you can call 988. And if you want to talk to someone, you're transgender and you're feeling suicidal and you'd like to talk to someone, you can call the Trans Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. So those are a couple of resources. Yeah. And it's also important if you have someone that you've loved and they have chosen, you know, for whatever reason to make that, to take that action, it's important for you to get support and to get counseling and to be supported by your community, because the grief that we carry when people that we love choose to end their life that way, it can be almost unbearable. I mean, especially if it's somebody that we've really loved and who's been a part of our life for so long, to lose them that way, it's just, it can be really unbearable. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about your friend or what you've, you know, what you've experienced this week during this really sad moment?
She was a very complicated individual. She could be trying to people. She was not always angelic, but when she was angelic, nobody was better. And so one of the things also is to recognize that we are mixtures of things. We're not just, whenever we try to characterize people as being, oh, they're good or they're bad or they're this, they're that, people are very complicated and we are very complicated. And that's why even if you feel safe right now when you're having a good day, remember that sometimes you've had bad days or times when everything seems to be spinning out of control. We have to be aware, to be on guard, not against the times when we don't have a problem, but on the time when we may have a problem. So in other words, be preemptive. Don't wait till the day that you've got a problem to begin to address any self-destructive tendencies you have. Try to bird dog them down before you have a crisis. I don't know if there's any way to get in touch and be ready for someone unexpectedly leaving your life that you've loved for years. That's one that you can't get ready for. You're either in the middle of it because they're gone, or it hasn't happened yet and you don't believe it'll ever happen. But be careful, because it happens to people all the time. And when it does, it'll hurt you deeply. But to refuse to love on the chance that maybe you're going to lose somebody is to miss out on everything. So sometimes you have to take a great risk. But above all, if you're going to do that, especially with a risky person, make sure you have a lot of friends to come to your aid at your moment of crisis, because it'll be hard if you put your whole life, as I tended to do, with this one person. So those are my thoughts tonight. God bless everyone.
Thanks so much. And again, if you'd like to reach out, you can call the Trans Lifeline. Their number is 1-866-488-7386. You've been listening to Trans Positive. Thanks so much and have a good night. Okay, thanks, Sheila. That was great.
tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime.